Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio. As we reach around the world, a big hello to our listeners in Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, England, across North America, and tonight, Estes Park, Colorado. We've got a great show planned, so we hope you can stick with us for the entire show as we talk about the recent Colorado flooding and all the devastation. Some folks have been right there on the front lines. Our studio producer tonight, all the way from the state of Virginia, the Honorable Distinguished Billy Willard. And hopefully, from the massive, newly renovated HD Wild World News Studios, Dr. Henry Day. Doctor, are you there?
He is not here yet. I have not seen him in the switchboard, Larry.
Okay, well, that's disappointing. We want to tell everyone that this part of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by We Want You Cottages in beautiful Chautauqua Lake, New York. And also the brand new site, Video On Demand, Bigfoot Video On Demand, the Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot.com. The recent expo we had the opportunity to be a part of with Steve Calls, Melissa Hovey, myself, and Billy Willard, and the infamous legend, Bob Gimlin. It's all on video, and it's currently available on Video On Demand through Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot.com. Available for $4.99, endless hours of video, and we hope you have the opportunity to enjoy that. They make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
And Dr. Day is not here yet, Larry, so I don't know how you want to handle this.
Oh, Dr. Day, we have no idea what's happened to him. It's hard to say. He may have got swept under the rug, and no one will ever see him again. But we're just going to continue with the program. Tonight, we have two very special guests. We have read in the newspapers. We have seen it on television. I don't think anyone, not unless they've had the opportunity to see it firsthand, the incredible flooding that has gone on in the state of Colorado. And for those who do listen to the show on a regular basis, they know my favorite place in the whole wild world, Estes Park, Colorado, Rocky Mountain National Park, and the communities that surround it has been absolutely devastated. And I really do not believe that the news media has really given us a true idea of what's gone on in that part of the country. We have with us tonight from his home that was heavily damaged from the flood in Lyons, Colorado, friend of the show, past underwriter, Igloo Ed. Good evening, Ed.
Evening, Larry.
Well,
good to talk to you here.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I would have to say my first question to you is, how are you doing?
Well, good considering all the circumstances here, that's for sure. My house, the basement's flooded, and my garage is maybe a total loss. I don't know if I'll be able to save that. And that's kind of my man cave.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to miss that.
Tell us, and you described it so well on Facebook, tell us that night when all there was 20 inches of rainfall. Am I not mistaken?
Yeah, in some areas down by Boulder, up above Boulder, it was 19.95 inches, I guess, one guy reported.
Mm-hmm.
And that evening, I was out in my man cave, and I looked out, and this was early, like 9 o'clock in the evening before I went to bed, and the worms were coming out of the ground. You know, they were getting grounded out, and I thought, well, that's all right, you know. Well, then I went to bed, and about 1:30, something woke me up, and I was laying there and kind of about ready to go back to sleep. I heard water, and I thought it was water running off my roof. And then it kind of got a little louder, and I said, no, that's not water. I was ready to go back to sleep. And that's not just rainwater. This is a flood. And I got up in it like a shot. You know, I realized it, and I got up like a shot. And I opened my bedroom door, and it was about 4 inches of water on the other side of the door. So I closed my door real quickly and grabbed my dirty clothes. I was in a pile on the floor. And grabbed them and opened the door again, and the water started coming in, and I went out into my living room downstairs, and it's a garden-level basement is what I have. Uh-huh. And my boots were out there floating. I've got custom boots. I got a foot that's a different size and one leg that's longer, and I can't exist hardly without my boots. And I found one. I didn't want to turn the lights on. I didn't want to get electrocuted or anything. And I found one. And I couldn't find the other, so I had to turn the lights on, and there it was. It was about 4 feet away from me, floating. And I grabbed that other boot, and I grabbed my jacket, and all I had was a pair of sweatpants that I grabbed off the floor. And I put my jacket on real quick and ran upstairs and put my pants on upstairs and then put my boots on without socks and then went outside to take a look at what was going on. And I went over to the river, and boy, it was it wasn't a normal flood. It was starting to come up. It was higher than I've ever seen it. I'm just like, I better get out of here. So I came back, and I had went into the garage actually and opened the door, the overhead door, and I started coming into the garage a couple inches deep. And I shut the door again, and I went out my small door, and then the yard was starting to fill up. I was walking in about a foot of water, and then I went, and my stepson, he come out of the house, and he says, what do you want me to do? And I told him to shut the main power off. So he went around behind the house and shut the main power off, and that's when I actually went over to the river to take a look. And I saw that, and I came back, and my car was, the water was just deep enough, you know, it was sitting right in the garage driveway, and I opened the door, and it was just about deep enough to run into the car. I got in, and I started the car, and I drove it out onto the street, and then the street was just running with just a couple inches of water, and I drove over to my parking area, and that was that was dry. I drove over there and got out, and my son-in-law, or my stepson, he was out of the house, and he had the power shut off already, and I says, well, let's get going, you know. So we both got in our cars and took off, and the door had blown open earlier, and I closed it once, and then immediately blew open again because the stairwell outside filled up with water. So then I took and looked in there one last look before I took off, just from out in the parking area there. And the basement was full, and all the furniture was floating, and books and all kinds of stuff floating around down in there. So it filled up that garden-level basement, which is, you know, about 5 foot deep, 4.5 foot deep, just immediately. It was running over into my stairwell. The water was about 10 inches deep running in there at one point that I noticed.
My God.
And then I had, by the time it was all over, I had to go back into the garage again to get in my car. And when I did that, I was walking in about 18 inches of water, and it was starting to get to be a fairly strong current. It was moving. It was moving fast, but not a real strong current. So anyway, we got in the cars, and we took off and drove up the hill right there. And you can actually get up just about 100-foot elevation above everything. And I knew it would be safe up there. I've always thought about, you know, where I would go for a flood. So I headed there. And parked the car, and I was completely soaked pretty much, and sat in there in my soaked clothes, and because they got wet on the floor and everything. And then my stepson, he went back down there to get my wife's car. And by that time, you know, it had been 10 minutes or 15 minutes. He was barely able to walk to the car without getting washed away. And he got in the car, water went in the car. The parking area is raised just a little bit, so water went into the car. And then he backed up, and he kind of started floating a little bit. But he got out onto the pavement, and he got a little bit of traction, and then he was able to get going and save my wife's car. And then we went up, and I was up. That was at 1:30 in the morning when that all happened. And I was up until the next night, about 11 o'clock at night, just watching the flood. Yeah.
How long did it continue? How long did water continue to rise?
Well, you wouldn't hardly believe it. You know, it rose, I suppose, you know, for like an hour or so. But then once it got there, it stayed there for, what, a day and a half, just about two full days.
Has it receded now?
Yeah, it's receded now. It's still running very strong, and the river channel is probably halfway filled up with rock and gravel, you know, from the erosion. So the river channel doesn't have enough water to handle a lot of water anymore, but it's pumped full up to the banks yet, you know, because of that debris or whatever you want to call it that's in there.
Would the snow in the mountains have, would they, I assume they would have added to this water?
Well, I don't think there was any snow, you know, during this year. Event, I guess you'd call it. I think it all came as rain, I think.
Man. We also have on the show tonight, the gal is known as Granny Heart to many of the fans and favorites of Rocky Mountain Forums, but we know her as Jennifer Rice, and she lives in Loveland, Colorado, and that name is absolutely perfect for that community. And she's had the opportunity to go in there and help our good friend Igloo Ed, and had a chance firsthand to see some of the damage that's been done around this magnificent area known as Rocky Mountain National Park in Estes Park, Colorado. Good evening, Jennifer. It's great to have you on the program.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be with you.
What was your first impressions when you saw some of the damage and what's been caused by this horrible flood that's involved this part of Colorado?
Well, it just, the news, you know, was coming, it was raining hard and raining harder and kept raining, and then you started getting reports about Estes Park flooding and the streets down Elkhorn, the main shopping area, and Fish Creek was flooding, and roads were getting washed out, and I heard about Lyons and thought about Ed and other friends that live in Lyons. And the news just kept coming, and it just kept getting to be more and more tragic the more we heard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, especially communities, you talked about, you know, not being, everything being covered. It's like Lyons, Jamestown, Pinewood Springs, Estes Park, a lot of these small communities, and there's a lot of them in those foothills, that are totally cut off and have no roads going to them. And Estes at first only had Trail Ridge Road, which, you know, this time of year it gets really iffy, you know, with the weather
right.
and the snow coming. But the Big Thompson Canyon, which a lot of people take from Loveland, it's my route from Loveland up to Estes Park and Rocky Mountain, is 85% gone. So that's pretty huge. And then 36 from Lyons to Estes Park is, I think, 40% gone. And,
oh, my.
You know, 7, another route from Lyons to, to the Peak to Peak up to 72, that's like 50% gone. So everybody now is having to take the route down to 70 and up through Blackhawk, and take the peak-to-peak highway up to Estes Park, which I did today, in fact. And that peak-to-peak highway is pretty beautiful this time of year with the aspens changing color. And
sure.
I got up in Estes, and went and visited a friend who has a store up there, and it was cool going down Elkhorn and seeing people actually going in the shops, and it's looking pretty good there. Of course, the people in their homes over by Fish Creek where they've lost the roads are, they're going to be struggling for a while. But they opened up, I guess 93% of Rocky Mountain National Park is open now.
Oh.
And it's awesome. Trail Ridge is open right now. They might get snow tomorrow, but it's supposed to be sunny over the weekend. I went down to Bear Lake, and the fall colors are awesome. The elk are bugling, and it's perfect. They're going to have Elk Fest this weekend in Estes Park, Saturday and Sunday. So Estes Park is open, and, it's a little bit longer, but it's a beautiful drive, so... But the devastation is so widespread with this, and like I was down at Ed's place and, you look around that neighborhood and, of course, it brings you to tears because, so many people have lost so much, and Lyons and, like I said, all these other little communities. But, everybody's pulling together and, this area has a lot of good people that can't be knocked down for long, and they're getting up, and things are getting done, and it might take a while, but it's going to be pretty great again, so.
Well, it's like I can still remember my mother when we'd go out there, you look up on the side of those mountains, like when you're coming through Boulder Canyon to go to the park and see these houses perched up on the side of these mountains. Of course, the broadcast that we got here basically said a lot of those houses are just washed off the mountain.
There were a lot of homes, that got washed. I mean, in the Big Thompson Canyon, Boulder Canyon, all those canyons are closed now. There really is, there aren't roads. There are a lot of them are washed. 7 and 72 and 119, 72 and 7 going up to Estes is really pretty decent shape, but that's basically the only road besides Trail Ridge until, as long as that stays open. But I think they're working hard on 36 from Lyons to Estes, which would save a lot of people a lot of time, and they're pushing for it December 1st for that. So we'll see. That'd be nice.
Well, God bless them. I hope they that drive through Big Thompson Canyon, it's one of the most spectacular and rather scary drives in the country. I mean, I can remember going through that canyon seeing these huge rocks thinking, what keeps those big rocks up on side of that canyon?
I think that going through a lot of the canyons and, I guess, different areas, of course they've had some rock slides with all the rain that came through and stuff, but they'll get it back. It's after the 1976 flood, they got it all rebuilt and it took, a few years to get it higher, to get the road higher up so it would withstand a flood again, but that didn't quite work out as planned. But they'll do it again, and it's going to be even better. So,
I
think they're going to do temporary roads in the meantime, so as they work on it, people will still be able to get access, Big Thompson, maybe not till next year with winter coming. I think they're working on all the roads now, So, and Estes Park is open, and all these other little places, like Lyons, I don't know, Ed, about the stores, and I don't think they even have power yet, or sewer, or anything in Lyons yet, so they're still pretty much just going
to the
I did see some lights on when I was out there Monday, or no, it was yesterday. And some apparently they're getting some power back in. And on Monday we saw that they were working on the main line coming into town. So I think they may have put up a temporary line because it looked like it jogged over the highway away from the river and then came back to where the original line where it was at. So it's looking they're working on the lines, but the sewer is out. It knocked out the sewer processing plant, and they're talking about 2 months to rebuild that.
The park, as Jennifer said, is open, but all the trails are closed. But, Ed, you never used any of those trails anyway, did you?
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if they closed the back country too.
Yeah, no, the trails are actually open, Larry.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, starting today they opened up. You can go to Bear Lake and you can go up to Bearstadt. You can go to Emerald. And she said, I talked to the ranger and she said that the trails are all open, but some of them are kind of muddy and messy in spots, but passable.
Sure.
So, they're open.
So has it had any effect on the wildlife in the park?
You know, I don't know. People have been taking pictures of different wildlife. And boy, just before I got in the entrance to the park, there were three good-sized bull elk, and one of them had his harem there. The other ones were, you know, wanting to steal a few of those gals. But they were bugling, and it was awesome. So the elk are out and, you know, making some noise. That was pretty cool.
Well, for the ones that have never had the opportunity, and I say this every week because McGregor Mountain Lodge is an underwriter for this program, is that they owe it to themselves that once in their lifetime they have to visit the Front Range of the Rockies in Colorado because it's absolutely spectacular. And for this flood to come when it did, I know they have a tremendous tourist business through the summer, but in the fall it is so special because of the spectacular show that goes on with the elk and rut. And a lot of the animals are coming down from the high country anticipating winter, such as bighorn sheep. And,
by McGregor, they get a lot of the bighorn hanging around there. And Michael had said that I think they just had one cabin that had carpet that had to be replaced, but they fared pretty well. They're higher up, but they had runoff from the rocks behind them.
Uh-huh.
But they're open, so if anybody wants to go up and hang out in a cabin and get some great views and hear the bugling, you know, McGregor's is open for business.
Well, that is fantastic news because I've tried to get a hold of Michael Hodges, which is many of his friends call him Smudge, the last few days, but he's been so busy, and I was so afraid that the inns and motels and hotels, they really depend on this time of the year. This is really quite the big bonus for them.
Yeah, and this having Elkfest, you know, stay on, that they're going to actually be able to have it, is huge because this, you know, hopefully a lot of people will go up there. It is so beautiful right now, like I said, a longer drive, but really, really worth it, you know, and get a place to stay and spend the weekend, you know.
Jennifer, it is worth it to come all the way from Indiana. I can still remember my mother. She was afraid of going on 70, and we'd come from Indiana on Highway 36, which takes about 2.5-3 days. Oh, my gosh, we couldn't get there quick enough. And then what was always fun is you go through Kansas and you say, I think I can see the mountains. Oh, look, no, those are clouds. No, those aren't mountains yet.
Well, my friend Janine, also on the forums, was just visiting here and also helped, you know, she and her husband Brian helped at his place in Lyons, too. And Brian said that Janine, wherever they go, she always says, well, if I squint enough, you can see the mountains.
I know.
So you just have to squint, and they're always there.
Oh, they absolutely are. And I imagine it's really quite humbling as well as I don't know how to put it, to realize all these great friends that you have that are willing to come and help you with putting your life and your home back together.
Yes, Larry, it's pretty wonderful. I kind of get a little lump in my throat whenever I think about it. There's a lot of them, and they've helped on there. There's a contribution site set up for it.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. You know, all the things people are saying, and you know, I didn't know I was in so many people's hearts.
Well, you are.
You are. Yeah.
And for the ones that do not know this, Ed is the modern day Enos Mills of Rocky Mountain National Park because he's made his way all over those mountains. He knows trails I've never even heard of. I've always thought I was somewhat knowledgeable of the park, but Ed he takes it a step further. And, you know, my goal one day is to come out there and have you take me up to the top of Long's Peak.
Okay.
You can do that.
I know you can, because you got our good friend Bill Powers up there, even though he didn't think he was going to die at one time.
Yeah, I was just up Long's Peak here, about 6 weeks ago. That was my first time this summer, and I was kind of planning on doing it again this year, but up with all this flooding and stuff now, and then it has been snowing here now the last couple of days or something up there, you know, off and on, so it's going to start icing up, and Long's will be technical climbing probably from here on out. So I don't know if I'll make it up again this year. I kind of doubt it. But.
Well, it makes you wonder when old Enos Mills went up that thing in a snowstorm with that little girl. I can't think of her name right off the top of my head. But for our listeners that do not know, Long's Peak is the highest point in the park, well over 14,000 feet. I'm sure Ed or Jennifer know exactly.
Oh, yeah, 14,259.
There you go. And it is just so majestic, the mountains that surround it and the moraines. And I've always said when you go to Rocky Mountain National Park and visit those mountains, it is a spiritual experience.
Yes, it is for me, yes, still. You know, after all these years, all the places I've been, every time I go, I get a soothing feeling, that's for sure.
And I've always said, Jennifer, when you look at those mountains, you realize at that moment that you're just a little speck of nothing.
Absolutely. You know, but you talk about Ed leading so many people around. I mean, if it wasn't for Ed, there's places in that park that so many people never see, you know. He got these special routes and has given so much joy to so many people and introduced them to parts of the park that, you know, most people never see. It's pretty special.
Yeah, well, I want to live that experience sometime. I've got to get out there. But as Michael Hodge is saying, usually we would stay at McGregor Mountain Lodge, a little cabin right there on the front row, closest to the park, a nice little cabin with a stove and a wonderful bed and just big enough for my wife and I. But when I told him we needed to bring our new daughter, Elizabeth the Olive Baboon, he was not too big on that idea, because we cannot leave her at home. I mean, that's just absolutely impossible now. So,
he allows dogs, so I don't know why not.
You know, that's what I told him. And we've debated about this for a little while, but I'm determined. And I will have to tell you, I was out there many, many years ago doing the Denver Sports Show, and we had a day off that we had the opportunity to come up to the park for the day. So, you know, they say there are no wolves in Rocky Mountain, though it is thought now maybe they have returned. For that one day, there was a wolf in Rocky Mountain National Park, but it was just in the back of my truck going for a ride. Our guest tonight, Jennifer Risen from beautiful Loveland, Colorado. Boy, isn't that the perfect name. And Igloo Ed from Lyons. We're talking about the flooding. And before we take this break, Ed, give everyone the information for your fundraiser to help you guys out and raise some money and get your house put back together.
Well, it's a rather long link, so rather than that, people could just Google Igloo Ed Family Fund, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember, Jennifer, what it's called, Igloo Ed?
Well, it's on, let me find it. I'll find it, but, it's on YouCaring or whatever. I think they do a lot of fundraising, you know, for different people. And I think it's Igloo Ed's Family Fund.
We're going to put the link on Larry the Animal Guy and Friends as well on Facebook. So people can have the opportunity to help out. And I was in a grocery store just the other day in Crawfordsville, Indiana, and I saw this guy's sweatshirt, and he had a picture of Long's Peak on it, Long's Peak, Rocky Mountain National Park, and I I usually don't talk to too many people in a grocery store, but I had to stop and have a conversation. I said, you realize that's one of the greatest places in the entire country. He goes, I know. And this is just about the time the flooding started. We're going to take a short break, have some PSAs. We'll be right back. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
I can't get the...
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny! Playing in the cave sure is neat!
Oh boy, a kitty cat!
Sassy? The kitty cat's yelling!
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
It's bobcat heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
We're Rascal Flatts. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
We'll be back with Igloo Ed and Jennifer Rison from Colorado. We're talking about the Colorado flooding of 2013 has just been devastating for many, many folks out there, and we do not want to leave it because I know what's going to happen. It'll be a old story on television, and you won't hear no more about it, but the hard work, the rebuilding's already began, and I know Colorado. I used to always say when we go there, look at the roads in these mountains that endure these unbelievable temperatures and conditions, and what great condition and what great shape they're in, and heck, the ones back here in Indiana where we have a devil of snow in the winter, and they're just a mess. So it's I know Coloradoans. It's going to get rebuilt. We'd also like to thank McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. Please go to their website, McGregorMountainLodge.com. The elk are out. They're bugling. It's absolutely beautiful. You can get to Estes Park. If you're determined, you can get there. There's a couple of routes, and they're going to try and keep as many routes open as possible. And go to their website, McGregorMountainLodge.com. I'm sure they would love to hear from you. And go out and enjoy the Rockies and the mountains of Colorado. And I'll tell you what, if you have a cat, I've stayed there many times, and you might have bighorn sheep in your backyard, or I can remember coming home late one night after having dinner from Estes Park, and I looked in the front yard of our cabin, and I thought, boy, that is a beautiful, authentic-looking ceramic deer. And about that time, the deer raised his head, and I realized I was a complete idiot. So McGregorMountainLodge.com. Go to their website. They make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Our guests tonight, Igloo Ed and Jennifer Rison. Now, you know, we were talking about Trail Ridge Road and how that is a... Are semis for a while, are they able to go across that road?
I understand that they took a gravel crusher across it. I guess they had a big convoy, and they're starting to work on Highway 36, I think it is, from the top, and using a lot of the debris and just crushing it up to build the road base.
Uh-huh. Doesn't that figure? The ingenuity is unbelievable.
And the determination, huh?
Yeah. So what's ahead for you, Ed? Now, we're going to post the link on my website, well, my Facebook pages, I should say. Larry the Animal Guy and Friends will also post it on Larry Batson's Wild World Facebook page. So anyone that would like to contribute to Igloo Ed, who has done more for visitors to Rocky Mountain National Park than anyone I ever know. I once tried to get Igloo Ed elected as president, and it wasn't a lengthy campaign, but a very, very courageous campaign with lots of enthusiasm. And if we could have spread the word across this country, who knows that you, instead of sitting on the top of Long's Peak, you could be sitting in Washington, D.C., and now that I think about it, that's just not right. So I think that's a terrible, terrible idea. But anyway, did I ever tell you guys, now Jennifer? You know, I know a lot about this Trail Ridge Road, and once I had the opportunity to spend an entire night just a few feet short of Rainbow Curve during a blizzard. Are you there, Jennifer? Did we lose her, Ed?
She's on the switchboard.
Oh, okay. Did we see 317 on the switchboard?
I see 970 and 303.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's... I don't
303 is me.
303 would be...
That'd be me.
And now it's you.
Yeah, I think our granny is 970.
Yeah, okay, very good.
Yeah, but a night on a Rainbow Curve there in a blizzard, that'd be pretty special, as long as you make it through it.
Well, that's the thing. We were in a, I don't know if you remember this classic automobile that Chevrolet used to produce called a Vega.
Oh, yeah.
And we were on the west side of the park. And for the listeners that may not know, Trail Ridge Road connects the west side to the east side of the park. And when we were out there, it was in May. So it was kind of like luck of the draw whether Trail Ridge Road was going to be open or not, because in the spring like that, they could get a blast of snow and it would be closed, of course. So we were heading up the road up to the main visitor center up at the top there, and just past Milner Pass. And they had the gate down. No one was allowed to cross Trail Ridge Road. The conditions had already worsened. And so we thought, well, that means we're going to have to go down and around, which involved about 3 hours of driving versus half hour going across Trail Ridge Road. And just so happens, this fellow pulls up in a Jeep with no top on it. And he saw that the gate was down, and he said to us in his own words, "I'm going to drive around this gate. You follow me. If you get stuck, I'll pull you out." So, being young and dumb, we drove around the gate. Just got a little ways down that road. The snow was unbelievable. And we got stuck. And the fellow in the Jeep decided that there was no way he could help us and that he was going to continue his journey on his own. So We were told the temperatures reached like 40 below that night. Such a horrendous blizzard, and there we were on top of this mountain with a quarter tank of gas in a Chevrolet Vega.
Lots of room in there, I'll bet.
It was, and the two gentlemen that were with me, and I use that term loosely, they said we should walk back to the, there was a phone back at the visitor center, and I said, oh no, we're not leaving this car. We're not going to be trudging in this snowstorm back to the visitor center and hope to find a phone to call somebody. That would have been suicide. So next morning, about 7:30 a.m., I can see the snow shooting up, and the snow blowers are coming up the road, and they're clearing the road, and they saw this poor, pitiful Vega with these three young men in it. And the guy came up to us. He says, let me tell you, boys, you're the luckiest ones on the face of this planet right now, because we almost decided to scrap this and not clear the road that day or even attempt to do so. So that would have been who knows what. And we went on, sure enough.
That'd be a close call for sure.
It definitely was.
That snow can drift for days and days, you know, and you try and walk in that. That wouldn't be good, for sure.
It's not good at all. And then when we got down to the below the snow belt, I would call it, there was the park ranger waiting for us, and it wasn't good at all. Hold on one moment. We have line two. Line two. Larry Batson's Wild World, who am I speaking with? Okay. Well, Granny, you need to call that number back. And we'll have you. Oh, well, give it a dial, and Billy Willard will get you right on. It's the Taliban. They take control of our show. The Taliban. Yeah, they take control of our show sometimes. Oh, okay. Please do. Please do. Thank you. All right. Billy Willard's pretty good at keeping the Taliban out of here, but tonight, who knows what happened. So, Ed, what's your plans down the road here? How long do you think it will be before you can get... I should mention your business, Graham Shelters. Are you able to operate? Was there damage done to the factory there?
No, we didn't get any water there, so everything is up and running there, but I'm having a hard time getting anything done with what I'm trying to do, you know, with my insurance, my homeowner's insurance, and FEMA, you know, the Federal Emergency Management Association, and just all the things that need to be taken care of. I'm having a hard time getting any work done. So that's pretty tough. And then at home, I need to rebuild my garage, and then my basement still needs to be gutted out. I've got 4 foot of dirt, silt, sand in the basement for the entire basement. So I think there's probably something like 30, 40 yards of material that needs to be shoveled out of there. And then all the sheetrock taken down and whatever else is damaged, taken out and then put back in. The carpet is down there, you know, take that out. So it's a major rebuild for me. And they're not even telling me if I can keep my house yet, because I guess the Corps of Engineers needs to make a decision on where they're going to have the river. I've heard that the river carves some new channels, and that they're going to use those channels. They're going to leave it there. And it kind of cut a channel across my block behind my house, and they may let the river go there. And all the houses on my block, except for my house and my neighbor's house, the rest of them, I think, are history, because they had 5-6 foot of water in them, and they're older houses. They're not really worth repairing, and Like one house, it was a huge two-story one. That house floated about 40 foot out, right out to the edge of the street, and it ran into the neighboring house.
The eave of that house
broke the chimney on the neighboring house. So that house is definitely history. And so I think the only two houses that will be left on the block anyway is my house and the neighbor's. And if the Corps goes through there and puts that new channel in, they'll probably make a park out of all these houses, a city park. And I don't think they're going to want to have two houses in the corner of a city park. So they may claim eminent domain. So we don't know that, and I got to proceed ahead as if I get to keep it, because if I just let it set, it's going to rot.
Right.
The Corps of Engineers, I've heard it's a minimum at least 2 weeks before they make a decision. They'll have to come in and survey it, I'm sure. And so it's really a mess. You know, nobody knows what the final outcome is going to be, and even dealing with FEMA, you know, what they'll pay and stuff like that. You know, this the fund, you know, is for me and my family. That's very nice and everything, but that's not near enough money for me to rebuild, to fix everything up. My upstairs wasn't damaged at all. The water actually came up on my deck. I had floating debris on the deck, but my upstairs floor didn't get wet. And the water in the basement was about 18 inches from the ceiling of the basement.
Oh.
So we've went in there and we've torn down the sheetrock in most places, took the windows out so the air flows through so that the humidity doesn't go up into the upstairs. Mm-hmm. We've done a fair amount of work. And then one thing we did do was take all the debris away from my bedroom window downstairs. And my buddy Tim, that's Bullwinkle on the forum, he was able to find my computer, and I sent the hard drive off to my son, and he's going to have a data recovery center give me an estimate on, you know, getting all the information off of that hard drive. And that's all my pictures since 2005. I got a digital camera, and I had backup chips, you know, memory sticks. But they were in the garage, too. And they're kind of small. I don't think we'll find those. This weekend we're going to go out, and all my tools in the garage. And it just, my overhead door blew into the garage, and then the back wall of the garage blew out. And the current washed all my tools out, and then it buried it with sand and rock. And I've actually got a sandbar in my garage that is over 2 foot deep. So all this stuff is buried, and we're going to go out this weekend with some sifting boxes or box screens and try and go through this stuff and find all my tools, and maybe we'll come up with those memory chips. And all those chips, those pictures, that's been my life since 2005. So I hope we find them. Yeah, I hope I'm able to recover those pictures at least. And then uncountable emails and stuff, you know, to do with the icebox, the igloo tool, and personal, you know, phone address book, and just everything on the computer. And then family pictures in the basement, they're all gone. You know, I had pictures that my mother passed away some 15 years ago, and all the pictures that I got from her then, and they're all gone, all the memories. And to a degree, I feel kind of free, like when I was a young guy and you didn't have any possessions and you could just go do anything you want, you know? And
That's right.
I'm really close to that. So in a way, it feels kind of good, but, you know, the overshadowing of the loss is pretty great.
I know, but I just have strong faith that with your hands and the help of many others, that it's all going to get put. I know it's going to happen. It's all going to get put back together, and you're going to
I hope the Corps of Engineers doesn't do the eminent domain, because I really love living where I'm at. You know, it's on a down in between two rivers, and the birds sing at night. And in the evening, the cold air comes running down the canyon on a hot night. And all of a sudden, you'll feel this cold air hit you. It's like nature's air conditioning. And the water table isn't very low below the ground. I can grow fruit trees and everything. It's just green, green, green down there. It's a beautiful place. You know, I've been there since 1977, and it's my home.
That's right. So what's your plans, Jennifer? I know you're going to give everyone a lot of moral support.
Well, one thing I want to say, I did check it. If you Google Iglewood Flood Recovery Fund,
mm-hmm.
it'll come up. And that's how
good.
People can help him, you know. And there's, you know, like you said, it won't come anywhere. They're, you know, redoing everything, but every little bit helps, you know. And
yes, it does.
I think you got to see it with your own eyes. I mean, he's dealing with a lot right now. So this weekend, yeah, we'll be there with the screens, and we'll be sifting through stuff and see what other treasures we can find under all that sand.
Oh, we got to find those chips, all those pictures for it. That's important.
Well, I've been told there's a 95% chance that they can recover all my files off that hard drive.
So
that's pretty good. I guess there was no corrosion in there yet or nothing, and the power was shut off, so when it got wet, there was no electricity to it. So hopefully. And
well,
I don't know what they charge for that, their data recovery. I've heard that it's at least $200, but, you know, to me, it's worth $1,000 because that's all my...
Sure it is.
I can recover a lot of the pictures off of the form that I've shared, but they're all downsized pictures. They're not the full resolution.
Yeah. I know. It's the one thing they can, you know, 50 inches of water can't take away from you is your knowledge and memories of your adventures in that park, which I've always thought deserves a book one day. But I know everyone that's...
Well, you're not alone
the right
there, Larry.
No. Oh, well, it needs to happen, because that would be one great way that you could build you a castle, because there's so many people that are such great fans of yourself. And I'm just sick that we have not had the opportunity to go out there and then be able to meet. Well, I did see Jennifer in Minnesota, and that was a great time.
Yeah.
But
yep,
to go out there and see Ed in his own domain and learn more about
them. Have a house built in another igloo and get you camping in an igloo, Larry.
Oh, well, hey, Billy, now, are you there? Billy, I know you're there. The Taliban hasn't taken you over.
No, Taliban ain't got me yet.
Okay. Let me explain this while I have Ed. Ed, what he does is he's designed this tool to build igloos. And it's quite amazing because it has I call it a huge compass, where you've stacked the snow in these plastic forms, and you go around in circles, and it gets a little taller and a little closer together in diameter. And he builds these unbelievable igloos in the mountains. And you can go up there, and, of course, because of the cold temperatures, they stay all winter. What's the largest one? Does it sleep like a dozen people, Ed?
No, not quite that many. It's 11-foot diameter on the floor on the inside. So it sleeps 5 very comfortably. It'll sleep 6 very comfortably. And if you really had to, you could probably sleep about 10 in there, you know. But you'd have to be pretty good.
Well, if they just go in there to snuggle, remember at the stomp we had that 21 people in there.
Oh yeah.
That igloo that time. And they
yeah,
all kept coming
like
out.
Old,
somebody
old
videotaped it. It was the clowns coming out. Yeah.
Well, you see, now Billy's from Virginia, and they wouldn't think twice about a dozen people in one of those igloos sleeping. And then they're great because you can go up there all winter, and not unless a local mountain lion or wolverines decide to take it over. And then, of course, in the spring they just melt back to Mother Nature. It's unbelievable. And I have to tell you, Ed, we did have one build out here finally. You sent me one of the kits, and we finally built it, but I was so embarrassed because I'd seen the one that you had built. And I'm going, oh, my God, this thing.
See, you got to come out here and get a firsthand lesson on it.
I certainly do have to do that. And as soon as Michael Hodges said I can bring a baboon, and that's just my...
Then you're all set, huh?
Yeah, I'd be all set.
And in the wintertime, there's no snakes for Cheryl.
You know, I got in big trouble over that. We were up. We were at Cub Lake. And she said, what about snakes? I said, oh, we'll see no snakes. It's too late in the year and blah-de-da-de-da. And about that time, a mountain garter spurred across the trail, and she said, well, Ranger freaking Rick, there goes one. And that's how I got this nickname of RFR. People say, what does that stand for? It's this range. Well, we changed one word. Freaking Rick. And so I had a, of course, there's on our honeymoon, the first hike I ever took her on, and we went up to the crater, and she said, this is a test, isn't it? You're trying to kill me. and that is, and she cussed me all the way up to the crater. Of course, it's not far, it's only a mile and a half, but it's rather strenuous right in.
Yeah, I mean altitude, you know, if you're not acclimated, boy, it wreaks havoc.
Yeah, and it's a rather steep climb. And then when we finally made it and saw the spectacular scenery, going down, you know, of course, going down is a piece of cake, and she goes, where are we going to hike next? You know? she loves that place. In fact, our honeymoon was the first time she had a chance to see that part of the country, and she completely fell in love with it. How could you not? It's absolutely spectacular. So, Ed, I know you've got a lot of work to do, but I know in the back of your mind you want to go up into those mountains.
Oh, yeah. I can't get there right now, so I just have to bite the bullet, I guess, is what they say, right?
Yeah. Well, it's going to happen, and I know you're going to get rebuilt, and a lot of folks behind you, and I know Jennifer just loves it so much. I bet it's just really tough to see the damage that's been done there, Jennifer.
It's hard, but it's so encouraging right now seeing that things are getting better, and I'm a lot more hopeful, and after being in the mountains today, it's like, you know, the mountains are calling and I must go, you know, and I'll find a way and it'll get up there and I'll follow him around in the park again. So,
oh, my Lord. You're lucky folks, I'll tell you. And I guess that in some respects you were rather lucky because there's people that have just lost everything, I understand.
Oh, yeah. Lots of houses just floating down the river, and they just disintegrate, you know, when they hit something, and pretty soon they're just a bunch of sticks floating down the river.
Well,
I'm not sure how many houses.
Go
ahead, Jennifer.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, also, if they go to that fundraising site for you, there's a lot of pictures and stuff on there that show Ed's house and the damage and the work that's being done there and stuff.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do the best we can. We'll post it on all of our sites and our hundreds of listeners around the world. Please help our good friend Igloo Ed out. He's been the guest. We've bothered him to be on this show three or four times, and I think Grand Shelters is an absolutely extraordinary. I'm telling you right now, it's a fantastic Christmas gift.
Yeah, you can tell him nobody's got it.
Yeah, nobody has it. You can order. What's the website for the tool, Ed?
It's grandshelters.com.
Very simple, grandshelters.com. And think about the holidays, and they could really use the business right now with all the devastation that's gone on. Jennifer, I would really like to thank you for being a part of tonight's program. Gosh, you made it very special.
Well, thanks for inviting me to come on with you. I had a blast. It's always fun talking to you and Ed, of course. So.
And Ed, God love you, man. I know it's going to happen. It's going to get put back together. I just wish I was a little bit closer to give you a hand. Or I'm a tremendous straw boss.
There you go. That's your problem.
Yeah, I'm a good supervisor. So, but anyway. Folks, God bless Colorado. God bless Igloo and Jennifer Rison for coming on our program tonight. We want to thank all of our underwriters, ChautauquaLakeBigfoot.com, McGregor Mountain Lodge, and our good friend at Tire Service Plus that keeps our animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles each year to share our wild animals with audiences of all ages. You have been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Larry.
Hey, Larry.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.